This evening, we're going to look at the first of the kings of Israel, King Saul. And we're going to start reading actually back in last week's portion in chapter 8. But before we do that, I wanted to take just a minute to lay some groundwork about the setting. And I don't know if I'm the only one, but when I'm looking at a story like this, especially in the Old Testament, I like to see where it fits in the big picture. And a timeline is often a useful tool for that. So we've seen a couple of these already. And here's another flavor. So we can start with a timeline like this. It has the bookends of creation and the end of the Old Testament. Then we can put on a few signposts that we're mostly familiar with. The call of Abraham around 2200 BC, the Exodus or the crossing of the Red Sea around 1446 BC, and then the time of the judges begins around 1350, and lasts for around three centuries. And then we have King Saul around 1051 BC, and that's our topic for tonight. You can see that the time of the kings occurs right after the time of the judges and stretches out for a couple of centuries, or several centuries, I should say. The division of the kingdom is around 931 BC, and then we have the fall of the northern kingdom around 722, and then the southern kingdom around 586. So we could tie the books of the Old Testament roughly to where they fit in on the timeline, and now for this summer series, we could focus in on the kings, and then we can highlight where the books of 1 and 2 Samuel fit in, and then further zoom in to our section for tonight, the reign of King Saul. Okay, now a quick look at a map. This is where most of the book of 1 Samuel takes place, and there are quite a few cities labeled on this map. I just want to draw your attention to a few of the enemies of the people of Israel. We have on the bottom left there the Philistines, and then just to the south the Amalekites, and then on the east side we have the Ammonites. And an interesting note about Ziklag, just by the cities of the Philistines there. I don't know if you can see it. I was going to see if I can get my cursor working. Apparently not. But Ziklag has been in the news in the past couple of weeks. Apparently, archaeologists have just found some artifacts dating back to the time of David. So in case you're interested in that kind of thing. Now let's take a look at the layout of the two books of Samuel. You can draw them out kind of like this, and then you can see that Samuel's life extends through most of the book of 1 Samuel and ends in chapter 25. And then Saul's story starts in chapter 9. You can see the rise and fall of Saul, and then the story of David starts at chapter 16, and you can see the rise of David, and then it continues on into 2 Samuel, and that's for next week. The way that Saul and David's lines cross here, you kind of get the X that Dave was referring to on Sunday, and we can simply break down the books into a couple of sections and focus in here on our portion for today, the last half of 1 Samuel. Now, this chart I put together kind of to help me, and I thought it might be worth putting out here. So there are the three main characters in the book of 1 Samuel. There's Samuel, Saul, and David. And you can see what each chapter through the book of 1 Samuel deals with, and you can see how Samuel occupies a lot of the beginning of 1 Samuel, and then Saul starts in chapter 9 and occupies most of the chapters, but not all, through the rest of the book. And then David shows up in chapter 16 and only misses one chapter. So one interesting thing to point out here is that Saul and David have a lot of interaction, and we'll see that in this story. So when you study the life of Saul, you can't help but also study the life of David, or at least a portion of it. Now, if this slide seems a little overwhelming, it is. This is the ground that we have to cover tonight. 1 Samuel is action-packed. I bolded the topics that I want to focus on and grayed out the areas that we won't be touching today, other than possibly a casual mention. Since Saul is the king in this section, the focus is going to be a little bit more slanted toward him. But as you saw in the previous slide, you really can't avoid studying Saul without David. And that's a good thing, because David actually serves as an excellent contrast to Saul. If it wasn't for him, the story would be even more depressing than it already is. Nevertheless, I'm going to leave a couple of David stories for next week for Adam, if he sees fit. Anyway, I broke down these topics into a much more condensed section. You can see the dotted lines there, and that brings us to this outline, which we'll try to stick to for this talk. In the first three sections I have listed here are actually Andy's section, or a compressed version of Andy's. And then in chapters 9 to 12, I'll reach back for a couple points about Saul's beginnings. And then we have Saul rejected in 13 to 15, and David anointed in 16 to 17, and David flees Saul in 18 to 20, and David in exile in 21 to 27, and finally the last days of Saul's reign in 28 to 31. So let's start by reading in chapter 8 of 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 4, "Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah, and said to him, 'Behold, you are old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint for us a king to judge us like all the nations.' But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, 'Give us a king to judge us.' And Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, 'Obey the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them.'" Now, we certainly could spend an hour reading and probably wouldn't get through 1 Samuel, but this is really where the story of Saul starts. We learned last week that Samuel was getting old and his sons were not really doing the job or good jobs as his successors, nor was it really God's plan for them to be successors. In verses 4 to 5, we learn that the elders of Israel got together and decided that they wanted a king. We can pull out of verses 5 through 20 three reasons that they gave for wanting a king. Samuel was getting older and nobody was going to succeed him as judge, so they wanted a replacement judge for Samuel. They wanted to be like the nations, and they wanted a king to fight their battles. Now, we know that the Lord doesn't allow something unless it's part of his plan. But the discussion between Samuel and the Lord in this chapter would lead us to believe that something's not quite right about this request. Consider these points. It displeased Samuel. He possibly felt like he was being rejected. But the Lord says to him, "They haven't rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them." The Lord tells Samuel to warn them about the king, what a king would do. And when they cry out because of the king that they have chosen, the Lord will not answer. Now, we can read as far back as Genesis chapter 17 that the Lord had a plan for kings to rule over his people. However, the people had a different idea than the Lord about what kind of king they wanted. So Samuel warns them what a king would do, charge them taxes, make the people work for him, and make the young men join his army. And then the people essentially say, "We don't care, we want a king." So the Lord instructs Samuel to give them a king. So in chapter 9, we meet Saul, a tall and handsome man. But besides that, he doesn't seem to be anything too extraordinary. Through a series of circumstances, Saul meets up with Samuel while he's out looking for his father's donkeys. And he wanted to ask Samuel about where he could find his donkeys. I guess that's what he thought the prophet was good for. But before he could ask Samuel, or before he could ask him, Samuel tells him he's going to have dinner with him, and by the way, your donkeys are fine. The Lord had already told Samuel that he was going to send him Saul, and that Samuel was to anoint him. So in chapter 10, Samuel anoints Saul privately and gives him a couple signs to confirm that this is of the Lord. And we read that God gave him another heart, and that the Spirit of God rushed upon him. Then Samuel brings all the people together, and then he narrows down who is to be king by lot, and the lot falls on Saul. It seems that Saul is a bit apprehensive to be king, because when the lot falls on him, he's hiding in the baggage, it says. But from that point on, he was king. So in chapter 11, we have Saul's first battle. Nahash the Ammonite had besieged the people of Jabesh-Gilead, and when they went to surrender to him, he said, "Sure, you can surrender, but under one condition: I gouge out all of your right eyes to disgrace Israel." So they said to Nahash, "Give us 7 days, and we'll see if we can find someone to help us, and if not, then we will submit ourselves to you." So when Saul hears of this, we read that the Spirit of God rushed upon Saul, and he solicits, or more or less threatens, all the people of Israel to come and join his army and attack the Ammonites. He cuts up an ox and sends it through all the territories of Israel and says, "If you don't come, your oxen's going to look like this." So in short order, he gathered an army of 330,000 people and defeated the Ammonites. Then Saul gathered all the people at Gilgal, and they renewed Saul's kingship, and from that point on, they all recognized him as their king and sacrificed peace offerings to the Lord, and everyone rejoices. So Saul's reign has just begun, and I think we can say that this is the high point of his reign. So much potential. Everything seems to be going well. Now, let's get the slides caught up here. So this is where we are now, and we're going to skip this because Andy did it last week. So now the next section is Saul rejected. So let's read in chapter 13. Chapter 13, and let's look at verse 9. So Saul said, "Bring the burnt offering here to me and the peace offerings." And he offered the burnt offerings. And down to verse 13, "And Samuel said to Saul, 'You have done foolishly. You have not kept the command of the Lord your God with which he commanded you. For then the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be prince over his people. Because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you.'" So in chapter 13, Saul had chosen 3,000 men. He kept 2,000 with him in Michmash, and 1,000 of them he assigned to Jonathan in another place called Gibeah. And Jonathan defeated the Philistine garrison nearby at a place called Geba. The Philistines weren't too pleased with this, so they gathered together a really big army compared to what Saul had. And they came and camped up close to where Saul was in Michmash. When the men of Israel saw this, they were afraid, and they hid in the caves and the rocks. And Saul was afraid too. Now Samuel had instructed him to wait 7 days, and he would come and make a peace offering to seek the favor of the Lord before going into battle. So this is where we are now. And day 7 came, and still no Samuel. So Saul decided to take matters into his own hands, and he made the offering himself. And sure enough, just as he finishes doing the offering, Samuel shows up and confronts him about it. But instead of repenting, Saul makes excuses. And Samuel tells him, "Your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be prince over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." So here we have the first mention that God was going to take the kingdom from Saul because of his disobedience and give it to a man after his own heart. But Saul would remain king for many years yet. But from this point on, we can kind of see that Saul's reign is taking a downward spiral. So let's move on to chapter 14. Chapter 14, And let's read at verse 6. Now, Jonathan said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised," speaking of the Philistines. "It may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few." Now, in spite of Saul's disobedience, the Lord grants them a kind of victory over the Philistines shortly afterward through his son Jonathan. It's clear from the verse here that we just read that Jonathan really had faith in the Lord. He and his armor bearer sneak up on the Philistines, and one thing leads to another, and the Philistines get all confused and end up attacking each other. And when the men of Israel see this, they start to chase them. But when we read that Saul made, when we read further on, we read that Saul made a foolish oath. I guess his soldiers were moving a little slowly, so he told them, "Cursed be the man who eats food until it is evening, and I am avenged of my enemies." So obviously this leads to weak, hungry, tired soldiers, and they don't fight quite as strongly as they could have. And furthermore, when the day was finally over, they were so hungry that they ate uncooked meat with blood in it, something that they were forbidden to do. But what's worse is that Jonathan hadn't heard the command of his father, and he helped himself to some honey. Then, after the people had eaten, Saul wanted to keep going, go back and keep fighting the Philistines. But the priest encouraged him to draw near to the Lord first and ask for guidance. So he does, but he doesn't get an answer. And somehow this leads him to believe that someone has sinned. And so he asked the Lord for guidance to narrow it down, and the Lord sees fit to show Saul that Jonathan is the one who sinned, and that because he had violated Saul's foolish oath by eating honey. Now, it seems like Saul is willing to kill his own son Jonathan for this, but the people manage to intercede for him and stop Saul from killing him. So we're starting to see some really rash behavior from Saul here, clearly not guided by the Lord. And then the last portion of chapter 14 mentions in a few verses that Saul had many successful battles against various enemies of Israel during his kingship. We have the enemies of Moab, the Ammonites, the Edomites, the kings of Zobah, and the Philistines. And in particular, there was fighting with the Philistines through the entire reign of Saul. He also amassed for himself valiant men whenever he found them. Now let's move on to chapter 15 and read at verse 3. "Now go and strike Amalek and devote to destruction all that they have. Do not spare them, but kill both man and woman, child and infant, ox and sheep, camel and donkey." Down to verse 9, "But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and of the oxen and of the fattened calves and the lambs and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them. All that was despised and worthless they devoted to destruction. And the word of the Lord came to Samuel, 'I regret that I have made Saul king, for he has turned back from following me and has not performed my commandments.' And Samuel was angry, and he cried to the Lord all night." And let's go down to verse 19. "Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you pounce on the spoil and do what was evil in the sight of the Lord?" And Saul said to Samuel, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord. I have gone on the mission of on which the Lord sent me. I have brought back Agag, the king of Amalek, and I have devoted the Amalekites to destruction. But the people took of the spoil, sheep and oxen, and the best of the things devoted to destruction, to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal. And Samuel said, "Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifice as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, To obey is better than sacrifice, and to listen than the fat of rams. For rebellion is the sin of divination, and presumption is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king. All right, so in this story, the Lord gave instructions to Saul through Samuel to completely destroy the Amalekites. He gives specific instructions to not save any of them, not even the animals. This sounds pretty severe, but it was going to be a punishment from God for the wickedness of the Amalekites, specifically what they had done to the children of Israel many years before. Now, Saul took an army of 210,000 and went and attacked them, and he destroyed most of them. But he decided to keep the king, Agag, alive, and the best of the sheep and the goats and animals. And God told Samuel that he regretted having made Saul king, and Samuel was really upset about it. Then he went to Saul, and Saul said to him, "I did what the Lord commanded me to do." So Samuel said, "Oh yeah? So what's that bleating of the sheep that I hear and the mooing of the ox?" So Saul makes excuses. "Well, we save the best of the animals to sacrifice to the Lord." And Samuel says, "Why didn't you obey the Lord?" And Saul says, "I did. I just saved Agag, the king. And the people kept the animals to sacrifice to the Lord." So obviously he didn't actually obey. This is when Saul says, "To obey is better than sacrifice, and to listen than the fat of rams." Then he says, "Because you rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king." Now, all of a sudden, Saul is repentant, but his repentance is reactionary and half-hearted. "I have sinned because I feared the people and obeyed their voice." And he's pointing the finger now at his men for his actions, not taking responsibility for his own actions. So Samuel starts to walk away, and Saul says, "Please pardon me." And he grabs his robe, and Samuel's robe rips. And then Samuel says, "Just like you have torn my robe, God has torn the kingdom from you and given it to a man who is better than you." So now we've been getting a lot of foreshadowing, I guess, of David. Then Samuel kills Agag, the king, and the Amalekites, and that was the last time that Samuel saw Saul before Samuel died. Not before Saul died, but before Samuel died, and you'll see why in a few chapters. Now, even though God had taken the kingdom from Saul, he would still remain king for several years because God had some work to do with his replacement. So to summarize this section, again, we see that Saul disobeyed the Lord, or the word of the Lord, and he did not repent. He made excuses. And what did Samuel say? "To obey is better than sacrifice." God's not interested in your sacrifice or ritual if you're not going to first obey. And also, partial obedience is complete disobedience. So the key verse for this section is, "To obey is better than sacrifice." So now we can move on to the next section. David is anointed. And for that, let's go to chapter 16. Chapter 16 and verse 7. "But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart.'" Down to verse 13. "Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers, and the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward, and Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. Now the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and a harmful spirit from the Lord tormented him." Down to verse 23, "And whenever the harmful spirit from God was upon Saul, David took the lyre and played it with his hand. So Saul was refreshed and was well, and the harmful spirit departed from him." Now, Samuel was pretty depressed with Saul, but God tells him to get up. He has a job for him. He wanted him to go and anoint a new king. Samuel's encouraged by Jesse's tall and handsome sons, but God has a lesson for Samuel. Man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. Normally, in this context of the story, when he says man looks on the outward appearance, we immediately think about David's older brothers. But think about the bigger picture here. David is not being contrasted so much with his older brothers, but with Saul. We've read already back in chapter 13 when we first read that the Lord's plans to replace Saul. He says, the Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. And of course, now we see who that is. From his outward appearance, what man could see, Saul looked like the kind of guy who would make a good king. But God could see in his heart, and he was not a man after God's heart. He had disobeyed, and the general tendency of his life was not to seek the Lord. And so the Lord knew David's heart, and he had chosen him as Saul's replacement. And so finally, he narrows it down to David, and Samuel anoints him, and this is where David's story begins. So for this part, we can have a key verse. Man looks on the outward appearance, and the Lord looks on the heart. So now moving on to David in Saul's service. But Saul's story is not over yet. Just because David was anointed doesn't mean he immediately became king and took over for Saul. It was going to be nearly 15 years before he actually would become king. But in this chapter, we find out that the Spirit of the Lord left Saul, and he was tormented. So he sent his servants to find someone who could play him some nice music to calm him down. And his servants find David, and he came to live in the palace and play music for the king on a lyre, an instrument kind of like a harp, to calm Saul down. And by the end of this chapter, Saul really likes David, and he wants to keep him around, and he gives him some special jobs. So next we have the story of David and Goliath, and for that let's read down in chapter 17. Chapter 17, verse 26, "And David said to the men who stood by, 'What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?' And David said to Saul, 'Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine.'" This is down at verse 32, and now 33. "And Saul said to David, 'You are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he has been a man of war from his youth.'" Down to verse 37, David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." Down to verse 47, "And that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." I imagine most people here are familiar with the story of David and Goliath. Usually when we read this story, we don't really think about Saul, mostly about David. But notice that before David goes to fight Goliath, Saul basically tells him, "You can't fight Goliath, you're too small." David was in his mid-teens by this point. And then when he sees that David was committed to fighting Goliath, Saul says, "Well, at least take my armor." But then the armor didn't fit well, and he said to Saul, "Listen, the Lord delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear when they came after my sheep. He will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And David recognized something that Saul didn't recognize. The battle is the Lord's. And David had faith. Saul did not. So then, sure enough, David goes out and kills Goliath with a stone and sling. We all know the story. And one thing I'd like to emphasize in this story is this lesson. Saul was looking for a strong man to fight Goliath, relying on human strength. And he was trusting in his armor. But David recognized, as I said, something that Saul didn't recognize. The battle is the Lord's. He trusted in the Lord and not in his own strength. So Here's our key verse. So now, moving on to the next section, David flees Saul. So in chapter 18, with five verses speaking about how close Jonathan and David became, Jonathan was quite unlike his father. We've already seen that Jonathan trusted the Lord. Remember, he said back in chapter 14, nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few. Very similar mindset to David's, the battle is the Lord's. Now, so the little that we know of Jonathan by now, we get the sense that he's a lot like David. Now, let's go on to chapter 18 and verse 7 for a reading. And the women sang to one another as they celebrated, Saul has struck down his thousands and David his 10,000s. Down to verse 11. And Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall. But David evaded him twice. Down to 14. And David had success in all his undertakings, for the Lord was with him. So until now, Saul hasn't really had any animosity toward David. But David's defeat of Goliath marked a turning point in Saul and David's relationship. We don't read this explicitly, but it's almost like Saul is starting to put two and two together and realizing that David is that man after God's heart, the one that the Lord has chosen to replace him. Saul started to hear the people saying things like, Saul has killed his thousands, but David his 10,000s. And the people were starting to like David better than him. So he got jealous and started to hate David. And two times David was playing music for him, and Saul tried to kill him by throwing a spear at him. Saul would send David to fight the Philistines a couple of times, hoping that the Philistines would kill him. But he had success in everything that he did, and he continued to get more and more popular. He even sold, quote-unquote, his daughter Michal to David for at the cost of 100 dead Philistines, thinking that maybe this would get David killed, but sure enough, David comes back with 200 dead Philistines. Everything he did, the Lord blessed him, and he just got more and more popular. So down to Saul tries to kill David. Another time, Saul created a plot to sneak up on him while he was in his bed to kill him, but David's now wife, Michal, heard about it and told David and helped him to escape through the window and put a statue in his bed as a disguise. And then in chapter 20, David and Jonathan have a conversation. By this point, David is pretty convinced that Saul will stop at nothing to see him dead. But for whatever reason, Jonathan seems to have missed the signs, and he's in a little bit of a state of denial. So they decide on a plan. The next day, they were all to be together for a feast with Saul. And David said, I'm going to purposely miss the feast, and you, Jonathan, gauge the mood of King Saul and bring back word to me. And they devise a way to communicate covertly. So Saul doesn't say anything the first day of the feast, but the second day, Saul asks Jonathan, what's up with David? And Jonathan tells him that he's gone to be with his family for the feast. And that's when Saul loses his cool and tells Jonathan in chapter 20 and verse 30, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on earth, neither you nor your kingdom shall be established. Therefore, send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die. So think about this. Saul knows from the Lord that his kingdom will be taken from him. He already got that message. Yet he insists on fighting against the Lord. So now Jonathan is under no delusion, and he's extremely upset. He brings back word to David, and they have an emotional goodbye. And from that point on, David is on the run. It's interesting to note in this chapter that even though Jonathan is Saul's oldest son, the usual rightful heir to the throne, he is fully aware that David is the Lord's choice for Saul's replacement, and he's not bitter about it. We see earlier in this chapter that he asked David to make him a promise. In chapter 20 and verse 15 says, "And do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever, when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." So this is a promise that David would keep years later in 2 Samuel, when he extends grace and mercy and love to Jonathan's son Mephibosheth. So let's go on now to the next section, David in exile. So in chapter 21, David and his men come to Nob, to Ahimelech, the priest, asking for some food because they were hungry. Remember, David is on the run now. And Ahimelech says that he doesn't have any common bread, only the so-called holy bread, or the bread of the presence, which normally should not be eaten by anyone but the priests. But he goes ahead and gives it to David. And he also gives him the sword of Goliath that happened to be there as well. It's interesting to note that Jesus used this story in Matthew chapter 12 when he was scolding the Pharisees for being so focused on rituals and sacrifice and failing to have love and mercy. And he said in Matthew 12 and 7, quoting from Hosea, "And if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless." So interesting that this verse is actually very similar to the one we read earlier. I quoted from Samuel, "To obey is better than sacrifice." Saul was emphasizing ritual over sacrifice, over obedience, while the Pharisees and the Israelites of Hosea's day were emphasizing ritual sacrifice over love and mercy for their fellow man. Anyway, while David was speaking with Ahimelech, one of Saul's men, Doeg the Edomite, happened to be there, and he witnessed the exchange between David and Ahimelech, and he brought word back to Saul. So now we have David flees to Gath. So David leaves from there and goes to the Philistine city of Gath, where Goliath was from. And sure enough, they recognize him as the one who killed Goliath. And so he gets scared and pretends he's crazy, and they let him go. And then he runs away to a place called the Cave of Adullam. And that's where a group of around 400 men from various places and circumstances came and joined him, and he became their commander. And then in chapter 22, we get Saul's retaliation for Ahimelech helping David. Saul confronts Ahimelech, "Why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse?" Then he commands Doeg to kill Ahimelech and 85 members of his family. And he even goes further and kills everyone in the city of Nob. Only one of Ahimelech's sons, Abiathar, manages to escape and runs to David to tell him what happened. And of course, David feels guilty and upset about this. And so Abiathar stays with him. And he becomes actually an important priest well into 2 Samuel. So then we have the story of David saves the city of Keilah. The first part of chapter 23 is about this story. He saves the city of Keilah from the Philistines, and there isn't much about Saul in this section other than to say that Saul heard that David was there and was going to go after him, but when he finds out that David had already left because he had received guidance from the Lord, Saul gave up the chase. Then we read of an intense chase in the wilderness of Maon near the place called En-Gedi, where Saul and his army are running along one side of the mountain, and David and his men are trying to run away from Saul on the other side of the mountain. And then just as Saul's army is closing in on David, he gets called back to deal with a Philistine problem, a Philistine raid. And so David escapes. Time and again, we see that the Lord is working to protect David from Saul. Now let's go to chapter 24. Where David spares Saul's life for the first time. Chapter 24 and verse 6, he said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed." Down to verse 17, he said to David, "You are more righteous than I, for you have re- paid me good, whereas I have repaid you evil. And you have declared this day how you have dealt well with me, in that you did not kill me when the Lord put me into your hands. Verse 19, for if a man finds his enemy, will he let him go away safe? So may the Lord reward you with good for what you have done to me this day. And now, behold, I know that you are surely, you will surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand. So in this chapter, we have the first of two times that David has a chance to kill Saul, but doesn't. And this, in this one, David and his men are hiding in a cave while Saul and 3,000 men are on the hunt for him. And now Saul has to go to the bathroom, so he went into the cave to relieve himself, but he hadn't noticed that David was just a little deeper in the cave. David was so close to him that he could have killed him, but instead, he cuts off a piece of his robe. And then he says to his men in the verse that we just read, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing against the Lord's anointed." Here we see something that of David's character. He would not take matters into his own hands. By now, I think it's clear that by usual standards, David had every right to kill Saul, even pleading self-defense. He knew that he was to replace Saul, and if he could kill Saul, his life would certainly become easier. But he wouldn't do it. He waited on the Lord. If Saul was going to be killed, the Lord was going to be the one to take care of it, not David. Interestingly, just after this event, David walks out of the cave and shows Saul the piece of robe that he cut off and tells him, "Look, I could have killed you, but I didn't. I have no intention of hurting you, so why are you chasing me?" And then it appears that Saul is repentant. He admits to David that he is a better man and acknowledges that David is going to be king, and then Saul leaves. And then in chapter 25, we have the death of Samuel and the story of David and Abigail, which has little to do with Saul. So I'm going to leave that for Adam in case he wants to take it up. And then we have in chapter 26, the second time that David spares Saul's life. So you'd think Saul would have learned to leave David alone, but he's back on the hunt for David. And has his second chance, David has his second chance to kill him. So let's go to verse 9 of chapter 26. But David said to Abishai, "Do not destroy him, for who could put out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?" And David said, "As the Lord lives, the Lord will strike him, or his day will come to die, and he will go down into battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should put my hand out against the Lord's anointed. But take now the spear that is at his head and the jar of water, and let us go." So David and one of his men named Abishai snuck into Saul's camp while he was sleeping and got so close to him that they could have killed him easily. But once again, David won't touch him, but instead steals his spear and water bottle. And again, he gives his reason. The Lord will strike him. David will not take this matter into his own hand, but he waits on the Lord. Then, when he's a safe distance away, again he says to Saul, "Why are you chasing me? What have I done?" And Saul responds, "I have sinned." And he says, "You can go back home and I'll stop trying to kill you because you spared me." So that's the last that we read of Saul trying to hunt David. Then chapter 27 deals with David moving to Ziklag, one of the territories of the Philistines near Gath. And this chapter doesn't involve Saul at all. So once again, we'll skip that and go to chapter 28. Okay, and this could be a key verse for this section. "The Lord forbid that I should put out my hand against the Lord's anointed." So now we're in the last section, the last days of Saul's reign. So Saul is nearing his end. He's gotten to such a low point in his life. He knows that the Lord is not with him. And he's getting no direction from the Lord. His enemies, the Philistines, are gaining on him. And at one point in his life, Saul had disbanded all the witches and mediums and sorcerers and that type of people from the land. And it's really telling of how low he has gotten that he now seeks to consult a witch. And the Lord allows the witch to bring up Samuel's spirit, who by this time is dead. And Samuel, or Samuel's spirit, basically tells Saul, listen, it's just like I told you while I was alive. The Lord has taken away your kingdom and given it to David because you were disobedient. And what's more, tomorrow you and your sons are going to die. So then we have these three sections that have little to do with Saul. And then we go to chapter 31. So let's read in chapter 31 and verse 2. And the Philistines overtook Saul and his sons, and the Philistines struck down Jonathan and Abinadab and Melchishua, the sons of Saul. And down to verse 6, thus Saul died and his three sons and his armor bearer and all his men on the same day together. So sure enough, just as Samuel's spirit had said, the next day Saul and his army go into battle, and Saul gets wounded so bad that he's going to die, and he knows it, and so he decides to end it himself. And his three sons also died, including, sadly, David's best friend, Jonathan. So that's it, the end of King Saul. And how can we summarize his life? The Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand because you did not obey the voice of the Lord. So, a very sad story, and that's the end of 1 Samuel. And 2 Samuel is all about King David, but that's for next week. So I think in this story of the rise and fall of King Saul, we see a king who was the answer to the people's demand, a king like the other nations who would fight for them, but not a man after God's heart, not a man who would make a practice of seeking the Lord, but rather depend on his own wisdom and might and the power of his own army. He was proud and arrogant. He placed little to no importance on obedience to the Lord, and he suffered the consequences. Saul serves as a lesson for the people of Israel, what kind of disaster a king after man's heart can be. But we see also in this section a nice contrast with David. Saul was a king like what the people wanted from the outward appearance. David was a man after God's heart. Saul's tendency was not to consult the Lord, but to go it alone in pride. But time and time again, we see David trusting in the Lord. Saul was proud and David was humble. David was not perfect, especially as we'll see in 2 Samuel. But David's general character was one of repentance when he sinned. He owned up to his sins. Saul just made excuses and pointed the finger and lied when confronted. And he offered fake and shallow repentance when he was pushed far enough. We see in Saul a man who was desperate and anxious. But David seemed to find peace in the Lord, even when he was faced with very anxious situations. We didn't take time to go through them, but there are several psalms of David from his time in exile, which really illustrate his dependence on the Lord. So be a David, don't be a Saul. A couple key verses from this section might be, these verses here out of Psalm chapter 33. The king is not saved by his great army. And behold, the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him, on those who hope in his steadfast love. So that's the end of our story in 1 Samuel about King Saul. So I hope that wasn't too quick and too information-packed, I guess, but interesting. and beneficial. So I guess we can close in prayer.